George Lakoff, it seems to me the great paradox of this moment is that we are a propagandized culture, really, in the middle of what we call an age of information. Explosion in information technologies and the freedom and the inexpensiveness of entry and all that kind of thing, and yet we do seem to be ruled by the ranters. How in the world do we get out of this?
Well, there are several ways. First of all, the ranters, as you say, are mostly conservatives, and they have a certain flavor to their rants. There are also liberal ranters. You know, I listen to KPFA in Berkeley, and there are plenty of ranters there. Mm-hmm. But ranting on the right is simply a use of a particular kind of strong language, language that has images, that has effective evocation of frames. You can have strong language without ranting. You can have language that is evocative and imagistic without ranting. You can have interesting language without ranting. You can have language that people want to listen to and find engaging mm-hmm. without a rant. What the right has done is create a populist art form, the rant, which also has a politics. And the left has not created a corresponding art form in which there is strong, imagistic, powerful, and entertaining language without, you know, the kind of stuff you get on hate speech, without it being hate radio. That is possible. It's not easy. It's a task that can be designed. It can be carried out. But, you know, it takes some doing to do it.
Well, let's talk about it. I mean, what would your specifications be if we were designing this space?
I'm not sure. We'd have to test it out a lot. You'd also want to find out, you know, if there are successful people out there. But Al Franken isn't the answer. You know, simply...
I think he's important. Why is he not the answer?
He's not the answer because, you know, he's funny in a snotty kind of way. But it's not that he comes out and provides a powerful new vision of the world that is positive and that really appeals to what people feel deep down. Hmm. He correctly points out the lies on the other side.
Right.
That's not enough.
An important bit of naming right there.
It's important bit of naming, but it requires that it go with a positive vision. And right now we haven't invested enough of our money and energy and, you know, scholarliness and so on, and the people who can do this, and our poets and our writers and so on, in creating that positive vision.
You haven't heard me say it, but I keep pointing to Ralph Waldo Emerson as the model of where we have to go. Emerson's whole ideal was an expressive individual, the idea of self-reliance, trust thyself, follow the gleam in your own head. But he also had an immensely conversational style, a kind of gentle New England town meeting traditional voice of a certain learning, but also fervently democratic. That's what I'd love to see restored. When he started a magazine in 1840, and it was really kind of a group blog, he said he wanted it to be one cheerful, rational voice amidst the din of mourners and polemics. It seems to me that we're still pretty much waiting for that voice.
That's correct, and it's not, you know, it's there to be either found or created. Easier to find it in someone who already exists. But right now, it's not obvious. There isn't such a clear voice like that that comes to mind. And the current rants didn't exist way back. The earliest person I heard doing that rant was Paul Harvey. When I drove across the Midwest way back in 1961 for the first time, I heard Paul Harvey and was horrified by this thing. But he was the most popular news broadcaster in the Midwest. You know, he sort of patented the rant style. And there hasn't been an individual like that for progressives.
George Lakoff, it seemed to me before 9/11... the whole world was on a trajectory toward many kinds of globalization. We were beginning to realize that it was one disease system, one pollution system, one health system, one larger cultural system, one human genomic system. 9/11 really set that back. How would you construct the language and the frame in which the United States could find a very powerful but connected and respectful place, you know, in the human family again?
Well, I think the idea that there is a global, that there are global moral norms, that there is a morale, that there is a general form of ethics and morality in global interactions that that makes sense, and that this is a morality again where the center is empathy and responsibility. That is, where issues like fairness, freedom, trust, cooperation, caring about others, being responsible in what you do, following guidelines like, the UN principle, the UN Charter has wonderful guidelines for this. This is a vision of a world community that functions as a nurturing community. It's a community of care, as opposed to a community of power. And it's a community of cooperation and a community of respect. I mean, those are extremely important ideas. A community of trust, where honesty matters, where keeping treaty obligations matter. I mean, that is a very different view of the world, from one where you have a community of power.
Fox News would call that giving away our birthright to rule the world in manly fashion. Can you imagine other media? Well, let me put it this way: what is the rest of the media going to do? The institutional media and the new internet media going to do to advance that kind of understanding?
You need a powerful language. I mean, here again, there's a language of leadership, and leadership doesn't mean you do what I say. You know, leadership has to do with open communication, with understanding what needs to be done, with doing it with competence, with doing everything competently, responsibly, right? Responsible, competent, open leadership is what matters in the world. You know, that's serious language. It's not namby-pamby.
That's what Michael Dukakis said. It's not about ideology, it's about competence, and George Bush Sr. kicked his butt.
It's not just about competence, it's about vision. It's about, moral leadership. And moral leadership, that has to do with responsibility, and with strength. That is, in order to be responsible, you have to be strong. And that does not mean that you give up an American vision. I think one of the greatest tragedies is that the right wing has taken over our patriotic language. Progressives love their country every bit as much as conservatives do, and in a different way. They love it for different things. I love this country for the concept of democracy, fairness, openness, trust. I mean, these are very important ideals. I love it for the ideal of care, for the ideal of self-fulfillment, for the ideal of using the government that builds an infrastructure that people can use, that people can contribute to year after year after year, whether it's building a national park system, an internet, a highway system. There are all of these things that are tax money. Taxes are what you pay to be an American, what you pay to live in a civilized society.
The dues for civilization, somebody said.
Yeah, it's the basis of civilization. And it's infrastructure. I mean, conservatives will happily pay money to join a country club. And they know when they join the country club, the money they paid didn't build the tennis courts or the golf courses, but they get to use them, and the money they pay will maintain them and build others. Right? It's the same kind of thing when you pay taxes. You're paying to be an American, live in America, and use all of those things, whether it's using the stock market or using the internet or using all of our scientific developments and our medical institutions. These are things that have come out of ordinary taxpayers, and they have sustained us. They're marvelous institutions. Whether it's the symphony orchestras, I go to listen to an orchestra, I didn't pay with the money I pay for that ticket to put that orchestra together. lots and lots and lots of other people have paid to put that together so that lots and lots of people can listen to it.
George Lakoff, I wonder, what do you make of the language coming out of the Democrats so far, and most particularly the Dean campaign, which seems to be leading the charge?
Well, it's not there yet. Needs work. Dean, what's really good about Dean's use of language is that he's kind of like Harry Truman. You know, he's forceful, which is good. He's serious and he's honest. You know, that's how he comes across. Mm. He has an image that's, I think, an important image and a possibly a winning image. He's not a namby-pamby guy. There's no namby-pamby language coming out of Dean. And that's extremely important.
Mm-hmm. Does it help to be an MD?
I think it does help to be an MD. An MD is a very good messenger. It helps initially, but then you got to build on it.
There's a sort of restorative theme there, and it may have to do with Vermont as a nice old green family state, but sort of take America back, or take the country back, America the way it was. What more does he need?
Well, there's a lot that he could use. And then, by the way, it's not just Dean. I think any candidate could use it. I think it's one of the things that Dean is doing right, and some of the others are, is using patriotic language. Dean always has a flag up there. It's very, very important, you know, to take back the flag. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of people who are progressives who don't understand the importance of taking back the flag. When my wife went to one of the demonstrations right after Bush was elected, there was a big demonstration against the Supreme Court decision in San Francisco. And she carried a big American flag. And the other demonstrators were booing her or saying, "Why are you doing this?" And she said very simply, "I love my country, period." You know, you have to take the symbols back, whether it's the flag or other symbols. Consider the following problem. I spoke to the Sierra Club board a couple of days ago. Mm. We're wonderful people who I deeply, deeply admire. And I asked them the question, why is it that most of the hunters and fishermen in America are conservatives and are supporting Bush's environmental program, not the Sierra Club's program? They were, you know, mystified.
Do we know that's true?
In general, if you start looking at the conservative worldview, there's a lot of hunters and fishermen out there.
Okay.
Plenty of hunters and fishermen who are conservatives and who are not supporting, you know, environmentalist programs, right? And the reason is that they come out of a conservative worldview. They identify with that worldview. They identify with people like Bush as people with certain values. They're, they're strict father values that come out there. And what's important is that you have to activate those people and say, you know, you too care about the environment. Not just the environment, you care about many things that we care about. You know, one of the nice things about Dean was that when he was governor, he supported the rights of hunters, you know, which was part of an environmental program. You know, when he goes to the South, he should have Hunters for Dean and Hunters and Fishermen for Dean organizations.
Mm.
As a doctor, there's something he's not doing. Going to veterans' hospitals. I mean, if I were Dean, I would, you know, when I went through the South, I would have my appearances at veterans' hospitals, you know, and talk to the patients and the doctors there about what it means to fight in the war, about what happens to you when you're fighting the war.
Yeah.
And what happens to the other people that you see, and what traumas there are, you know.
That's an interesting idea. You know, have you seen the New Atlantic Monthly has an article about John Kerry in Vietnam, and it's utterly fascinating. He knew exactly the chaos, the deeply depressing, upside-down, dangerous, ruthless, senseless loss of his best friend, of Vietnamese children. He saw the absolute agony of that confrontation. To me, the great mystery is why, even today, about Iraq, he doesn't bring any of that sensibility into the campaign. We must be strong. You need a warrior. I'm more of a military guy than George Bush. You don't get any gasp of that insight he had in his 20s, that war is an utterly horrendous spectacle.
there isn't an appropriate language for it in politics.
Well, but there was. You know, they're publishing his letters to his parents, to his best friend, to his soon-to-be wife. He understood it then. You could go back and get that language right out of his own life. Why can't he do that in politics?
It's not ready yet.
What's not ready?
I think, first of all, most of the voters are not prepared.
To be told that...
I also think Kerry is, you know, running a very cautious campaign. I think if he started out as the major underdog, he might be trying it. But I don't know. I don't know what he's like as a person. I don't know Kerry personally. So I really can't answer the question about him. But I can say right now there is not a publicly acceptable language of opposition to war that's out there. And there's not a publicly acceptable language that tells you what war really is.
I wonder if you're underselling the culture, really. We know that war is hell. I think we want to be reminded that it's extremely dangerous. John F. Kennedy had been through it badly and carried that awareness with him. You know, he may have thrown that wisdom away in Vietnam. But do you really mean to say that you can't run for office as a former warrior and embody caution? Dwight D. Eisenhower really did. That you can't say, listen, even in a Christian perspective, in a Judeo-Christian tradition of tragedy and flawed humanity, say, God help us, appeal to our better natures here. Don't let's make another foolish mistake. We are a great country, but we're given to all sorts of folly, from slavery to Vietnam. Let's be extremely careful in our role as world leader, best hope of man.
That's just what Senator Byrd said, you know?
Well, Senator, he said it Byrd, well, and a lot of people believe
Senator,
it. The New York Times wouldn't put it on page
Senator
one.
Senator Byrd was extremely eloquent about this. Senator Byrd said exactly what you said. He said it with extraordinary ability and power and force and eloquence. And who read his speech? It wasn't on the news.
This is so sobering. I mean, look at the Atlantic article on Kerry, a man scared out of his wits for month after month, absolutely numbed by the loss of his best friend, stunned at the fact that his swift boat was being used to protect little criminal gangs, some of them Viet Cong who'd been turned around by the CIA, to kill people wantonly. It was utter moral chaos for him, and he took it very, very hard. He could not express any of that language in the U.S. Senate on the approach to war with Iraq. He can't say it in a campaign today. There's something terrible missing here.
If he's running for office, do you want your president to think of the use of the military as merely moral chaos?
What,
or do you want to think of the use of the military as highly moral in protecting a country?
Do you want to wait 35 years before you can say, in hindsight, that was moral chaos, and I was in the thick of it in Vietnam?
The problem is this. It may be correct, which it is. It may be a personally, deeply important experience for him. But can he convey it in a way that people will see that someone who has had that experience will be a better president and a better commander-in-chief?
Well, I think people want those dots to be connected. We know from Iraq that these 20-year-old kids who don't speak the language of the people they're fighting or befriending and can't tell the difference between them are in desperate, desperate sort of existential crisis, as John Kerry was 35 years ago in a very similar situation.
That's not what people want to hear right now.
But
there isn't a framework in which, there isn't a conceptual framework in which you can say that and have the people who were in the army in World War II and Korea, and, you know, and Vietnam step forth and say, I was proud of my America. I'm proud to be an American when I hear this.
But you're buying their frame. Of course there's a framework. The framework is war is hell.
That's
and
more,
don't go there without the most extreme provocation or American.
That's correct, but we don't have that now in our public life. We don't have it out there on TV.
We don't have it
understood. The people who come back from war don't want to talk about the hell. They don't. If they talk about the hell, they're not given commendations for it. Other people don't think they're wonderful for it. You know, the people who come back talking about how proudly they served their country, they get the commendations because that language is out there, that frame is out there.
I don't really agree with you. I think people not only want to hear it, but people like John Kerry in combat want to tell it. What John Kerry wanted to say at age of 25 from Vietnam was, "Mom and Dad, I don't know how this happened. My best friend, Stillwell, is dead. This makes no sense at all. We're hiring thugs to kill children. You know, explain this to me." And I think not only we see that in the faces and the letters of kids in Iraq today, but we want to know it. We know it's true. We want to hear somebody say it.
I'm not sure that's true. I wish you were, I hope you're right. But I have a feeling that a lot of people who march in parades on the 4th of July don't want to know it.
But I think that's just buying into their framing.
It's buying. We don't have an alternate framing that says people, the frames you have to come out and say, we're good. We're a good people. And here's the way we're good. If you don't say that, if you say, we're bad, we suck, we're awful, you know, who's going to come and buy that?
No, I disagree with you. We want to say we're flawed. We're desperately good people. Our intentions are fine. We know we make stupid mistakes over and over again in our private lives and in our public history. Let's be careful. Let's be grown up. Let's look again.
The way to say that is we're responsible people and we care. Right? What's good about us is we're responsible, we care, and we look at our mistakes, and we learn from them, and we become better. Right? That's a different message, a very, very different message. That one you might be able to get across, but you have to be able to work on it, and it hasn't been worked on.
Well, we're going to work on it some more. All of us. All of us as citizens, I hope. George Lakoff, this is enormously interesting, and I'm very, very grateful for the chance to talk with you.
Wonderful to talk to you, Chris.
And I want to do it again.
Anytime. Give me a call.
I'll do it. Thank you, George.